Chapter 22, The Trip Home. As the bus rolled through Zawadi, Melissa viewed the settlement through the bars of her cage. The sun was merciless, beating down intensely. Although the cage was ventilated with bars, the heat inside was oppressive, as if trapped by the metal which had absorbed the sun's heat. Melissa thought about how much hotter it would be if the cage weren't painted white. The cage floor was hot, and the heat had spread to the bars, making them hot to the touch, enveloping her in warmth from all directions. She looked at the other slaves, all looking drained and silent. She was curious about their backgrounds, but understood they were conserving energy and moisture by not talking. Sweat covered everyone, despite the open design of the cage. The close quarters made the air humid. The sweat dripped onto the hot floor, evaporating and adding to the muggy, sweaty smell inside. Outside, she saw mud huts and wooden structures. Palm trees swayed, providing a visual escape from the heat they were all enduring. She noticed market stalls, vibrant with an array of vegetables, colorful clothes, and various goods, with lots of people. Yet, none of them seemed to notice the slaves in the cage on the trailer. The sounds of the town, vendors shouting, the chatter of the locals, the occasional honk from vehicles, blended with the noise of the bus's wheels bumping over the rough ground. She saw naked slaves pulling wagons and thought about how in Grabesian society, she was on the same level as them. For a fleeting moment, the bitter twist struck her, arriving in Zawadi caged and now leaving the same way. Despite her friend's so-called rescue, she hated being a slave, and she hated the collar on her neck that marked her status and made people treat her as livestock. She reminded herself that this was only temporary. 10 more days, she told herself, then she would be free. She would have rights, no one would be able to cage her like this again. As the bus left the settlement, the atmosphere shifted. The noise of human life was replaced by the sounds of the tropics. Bird calls, the rustle of leaves, and the occasional call of a distant animal. The scenery turned wild, with dense vegetation encroaching on the road. Without the shade of buildings, the heat intensified, the sun piercing through the leaves, turning the cage into an oven. The ride grew bumpier as the road deteriorated. The cage shook and rattled with every jolt. Melissa clung to the bars for stability, catching fleeting views of the wild beauty around her. Tall grasses, wildflowers, and trees with wide-spreading branches, all through the cage bars, rather than a window like her friends. The bus moved at a relaxed pace, but while the bus had shock absorbers, the trailer did not. Each bump and each large stone made the cage shake and sent shocks through her body. To steady herself against the jarring bumps, Melissa clung to the bars with a fierce grip. The effort to stay upright was exhausting. Her arms, shoulders, and hands grew tired from the constant holding and adjusting to the bus's movements. Her core was also engaged, working hard to prevent her from being tossed around, further draining her stamina. The continuous physical strain made her sweat even more, adding to the already sweltering conditions inside the cage. The other slaves were also perspiring, contributing to the damp, sweaty atmosphere. Her skin felt sticky, and she was thirsty. Eventually, the sounds of civilization returned, with the honking of vehicles and distant shouts. They were entering another settlement. Melissa saw mud huts, wooden structures, and the occasional stone building nestled among palm trees. The bus soon pulled into another market square and stopped. She watched as the bus driver walked past the cage trailer. He unlocked the padlock and opened the door. Melissa stepped out with the other slaves, being careful to hold onto the cage. Exiting felt like getting out of an oven. Her circulation was slow, and she was dizzy from the heat and likely dehydration, worried she might lose her balance. She was still chained to the others. She was first on the chain from where it was attached to the cage. If she fell, The chain could tighten and jerk her collar painfully. As before, they stood in a line in the order they were locked to the chain. Melissa stood again with her legs spread shoulder wide. She felt sticky from the sweat and weakly raised her hands to her shoulders. She turned her palms to face forward like everyone else. She looked at the ground in front of her and tried to fix her gaze on one point to help with her balance. She wished they were allowed to move more so she could get her blood circulation going. Standing in the hot sun, she feared she might faint, but no one checked on her condition, and she didn't know how to ask for help since she needed permission to speak, and the bus driver wasn't paying attention to her. Should she fall forward, the chain locked to her collar would drag the slave to her right along with her. To her left, the chain was locked to the cage, and this would pull her back and yank her neck towards the cage. This would be painful, and she might be hurt. Melissa decided that if she sensed she was about to faint, she would attempt to grasp the chain to mitigate the impact and aim to collapse directly downward rather than forward or backward. A man accompanying the bus driver pointed to the middle-aged female and the male slave. The bus driver then unlocked them from the chain, and they walked over to their owner. The fresh air was a slight relief for Melissa, cooling her down as her sweat evaporated more freely in the open. The air was still warm, but breathing it was refreshing after the close, sweaty confines of the cage. A black man with an umbrella, who was lean and muscular, stood there with three slaves kneeling beside him, two male and one female. The male slaves looked like they were older, perhaps their 50s or 60s. The female slave appeared to be in her 30s, Melissa guessed. The man motioned for the slaves to go over, and the three of them went to stand behind the chain in the same stance as Melissa and the other slaves already locked to it were. The female slave stood next to Melissa. The bus driver locked them all to the chain. With two claps and a point towards the cage, the bus driver signaled for them to get back inside. Melissa, along with the others, climbed back into the cage without anyone offering water or asking her how she felt. It was clear the bus driver was indifferent to their suffering, and even her friends, including Arbeck, hadn't stepped off the bus to see how she was. As she entered, she could feel the heat radiating from the steel cage. The man and the bus driver then got back on the bus, and they resumed their journey. The road led them out of the settlement and back into the wilderness. The bumpy road shook the slaves again, with no shade in sight, and the sun was beating down fiercely on the cage. Melissa was wilting under the relentless sun, the metal of the cage hot against her skin. Sweat beaded on her forehead, trickling down her back, carrying with it the musky smell of human exertion. She looked at the new woman next to her and saw an ear tag on her, identical to her own. She hadn't noticed that before because the woman had been standing to her right when she was added to the chain. Her mind was flooded with questions, but the heat and her parched state left her too drained to voice them. From the front, the engine began to make louder, sputtering noises, coughing as if struggling. There were clanging sounds, and then the bus came to an abrupt stop. She heard the bus door open, someone stepping off, and then the clanging of metal. From her position in the cage, she couldn't see beyond the bus, leaving her clueless about what was happening. They had been standing for what felt like 10 minutes. The sun was relentless, and despite the cage being painted white, the heat was intense, radiating from every direction, floor, sides, and top. Melissa felt utterly exhausted, on the brink of fainting. Amidst the familiar smell of sweat from their group, Melissa noticed something different, a subtle sweetness in the heavy air that hadn't been there before, like a bit of vanilla amidst smoke. Melissa inhaled deeply, wondering. It wasn't just sweat. There was this new scent, faintly nutty. It was like the milk in her coffee had been left out too long, with a hint of soapiness and sourness. She glanced over at the woman, who was now chained next to her, and noticed for the first time the dampness on the woman's breast. The realization hit her. That smell, it was breast milk, faint and yeasty in the stifling air. The woman beside her was leaking breast milk. In the stifling heat, her sweat had mingled with milk leaking from her, creating this odd, yeasty aroma, like bread dough left to rise for too long. She heard footsteps and turned her head. She saw Marcus coming around the bus. He looked relaxed in his shirt and shorts, wearing his backpack and sipping from a bottle of Coke. He spotted Melissa and walked over to the cage.
"Hey, how's it going?"
he asked. Marcus, though only of average height, was still taller than the top bars of her cage, so he was looking down at her. Melissa was sitting cross-legged, one leg up, leaning against the sidebars. She turned to look up at him. Melissa, her voice a hoarse whisper, managed,
"Marcus, what's going on?"
"Oh man, what happened to you? You sound terrible,"
he noted, his eyes scanning her condition.
"Drink,"
she croaked, her finger weakly pointing at the bottle.
"You want some?"
he asked. She turned to face the bars, the chain clinking as she maneuvered it over her head, her hands gripping the bars for support.
"I need to drink,"
she insisted, desperation clear in her tone.
"I need to drink,"
she said. Marcus opened the bottle and positioned it against the cage bars so Melissa could drink. He had come prepared with a giant 2-liter bottle, but it was too wide to fit through the cage bars. He held it steady while she pressed her lips to the opening, eagerly gulping down the Coke. The other slaves watched this small act of mercy. They stayed silent, but a few licked their lips and others swallowed hard. Their bodies craved the relief Melissa was experiencing. Their gazes were filled with envy, but there was no vocalization, no words of jealousy or gratitude, just quiet endurance. Melissa drank eagerly until the carbonation forced her to pause. Marcus pulled the bottle away. Melissa felt sweat forming all over her naked body from the fluid intake.
"The engine overheated. I think the bus driver's letting it cool down a bit and adding more coolant."
Melissa nodded.
"It's so hot in this cage."
She felt new drops of sweat running down her back, dreading the thought that her time in the cage would be extended due to the bus breaking down.
"More,"
she said, looking at his bottle.
"Anything for you, Mel. You know that."
Marcus smiled, opened the bottle again, and held it through the bars so she could drink. Melissa drank the precious Coke greedily. She didn't know how long she'd be locked in this hot cage, and for all she knew, this might be her last drink for a while. Her nudity, the chains, and the cage all amplified her sense of vulnerability, especially under Marcus's gaze. She noticed that he was staring at her ear tag, and she rearranged her hair to cover it.
"Hey, Tariq found out there's this app called the Mootag Explorer,"
Marcus said with excitement.
"I wanted to download it, but there's no cell service here. Can you believe this old wreck of a bus doesn't even have Wi-Fi?"
"Thanks for the drink,"
Melissa said weakly, feeling her strength returning a bit. She thought bitterly about the app. She didn't want Marcus to access her medical file. It was personal, but she was chipped, and he had a smartphone. Once he downloaded the app, he could scan her chip, and she couldn't stop him. But she had more immediate concerns.
"How long until we're home?"
"I don't know. Depends on how long it takes to fix this. But after that, maybe another hour or two,"
he replied. Melissa was devastated, trying to fathom how she'd survive so long in this hot cage.
"It really is quite hot out here,"
Marcus commented.
"I'll get back inside. At least this old rust bucket has air conditioning. See you later, Mel."
After perhaps another 10 minutes, she heard a door slam, and the bus awoke to new life. The trailer cage she was in was pulled forward again. She was bumped around again by the unevenness of the road and held on to the bars of the cage to stabilize herself. But then she noticed a change in the wind. the sun's intensity waned. Looking up, she saw clouds drifting in front of the sun, and more clouds gathering on the horizon, starting off white and fluffy, then growing darker and more expansive. She felt the air cooling, the first sign of relief from the day's relentless heat of the sun. The sky transitioned from blue to a foreboding gray, with clouds swelling. The sunlight dimmed, casting the world into a twilight that seemed more like early night than afternoon. The first drops of rain touched her skin, tapping against her plastic ear tag, the metal bars, and the cage floor. The initial patter was soft, almost soothing, but it quickly grew into a deafening downpour as the sky let loose. The trailer shook under the onslaught of rain. Water cascaded down in torrents, blurring the outside world into mere shadows and shapes. The air inside the cage cooled, but became more humid. Melissa caught the scent of wet earth outside. Lightning illuminated the sky, briefly piercing the darkness, followed by the rumble of thunder. The cage provided no shelter from the rain, which came through the bars from above and the sides and drops splashing up from the floor. There was nothing she or the other slaves could do but sit and endure the shower. Melissa had initially felt grateful for the rain cooling her down. The rain wasn't uncomfortably cold, it was quite warm, in fact. However, the sudden shift from the scorching heat to the tropical downpour made it feel colder than it actually was. As they drove through the wilderness, the wind picked up, creating a chilling effect. The cage prevented her from moving around to generate warmth, and she wished the bus driver would at least cover the cage to shield them from the downpour and the wind. The bus journeyed for another half hour or so before they reached another settlement. It was still raining when the bus driver emerged in a poncho. He unlocked the cage and all five slaves stepped out, careful not to slip on the wet steel. The once sandy street was now muddy, and Melissa felt the cool mud under her bare feet. They lined up in a row, spreading their legs, holding their palms at shoulder height, and facing forward, the pose required of them. It took some time for the passengers to disembark. Apparently, no one was there to claim a slave. Melissa stood nude with the others in the mud, under the pouring rain, while the bus driver went to the bus shelter to sell tickets to others who then boarded the bus. Her feet sank further into the mud, and the rain splashing around her coated her legs with more mud. The rain was cool, not cold, providing a welcome contrast to the searing heat they had endured earlier. But the wind quickly began to intensify again, driving the rain into Melissa's eyes. She longed to turn away or at least shield her eyes with her hands, but doing so would mean breaking position. Her hands were supposed to stay at her sides, with palms facing forward, or she risked punishment. All she could do was to close her eyes and squint, trying to keep the rain out. Melissa expected they'd be ordered back into the cage, but the bus driver didn't make any such motion. She quickly realized why. More people were arriving, having sheltered under one of the stall's sunroofs while waiting for the bus. She envied her friends inside the bus, who were dry and clothed. Her shoulders and arms ached from the prolonged effort of holding them in position. None of the other slaves moved, and the fear of being singled out for punishment for breaking formation kept her standing in that increasingly strenuous stance. The rain ran down her back and found the sensitive nook between her buttocks. Here, the water felt like a ticklish stream and occasionally made her clench, in response to the unfamiliar sensation. As she stood in the pouring rain, she watched as the bus driver sold tickets to the new passengers under the bus shelter. Her pubic hair felt heavy as it caught some of the rain, and drops either slid down or got tangled. The drops sometimes lingered on her labia before gravity pulled them down her thighs, where the water felt like fingers intimately tracing her skin down her inner thighs. Melissa observed two older white men with large umbrellas, each accompanied by a younger black female slave. The girls were athletic, with long hair kneeling next to their owners under the protection of their umbrellas. The two young women started walking to the chain. As the cool rain hit them, their naked bodies instinctively curled inward. They hunched their shoulders forward and wrapped their arms slightly around themselves in an attempt to shield their skin from the chill. Their steps were hasty. Their feet splashed through the puddles with brisk strides. Their faces were tense, their eyes squinted against the droplets, and their heads ducked slightly to prevent the rain from running off into them. As they hurried to the chain, Melissa noticed that one of them had a completely shaved vagina, while the other sported a neat landing strip. Melissa's intuition told her that these women were sex slaves, likely assisting with household tasks as well. But their well-kept appearance suggested their primary role. The two stood behind the chain, next to each other between the woman who was leaking breast milk and the woman who had been chained at the same stop as Melissa, and assumed the stance of the other slaves. The bus driver came over to them and locked their collars to the chain with padlocks. After what felt like an eternity of standing in the mud during a downpour, he finally signaled for the slaves to return to the cage. Melissa pulled her feet out of the mud and climbed onto the trailer cage. She had to be careful because it was so slippery. Eventually, everyone was in, and the bus driver slammed the cage door shut behind Melissa and locked it with the padlock. Then he went into the bus, and their trip finally continued. On the journey to the next settlement, they had to cross a stream. Melissa could see it through the cage bars ahead. The bus was designed for shallow water crossings, with its high clearance and pipes for exhaust and air intake. This was beneficial because the stream had swollen due to the heavy rain. The bus navigated the stream effortlessly, but when the cage trailer followed, the water rose above the cage floor. Suddenly, with part of the cage submerged, the slaves found themselves immersed in cool water. Although Melissa had seen the stream approaching, she hadn't anticipated this, and the shock made her scream. She didn't know how deep the water would get. If it rose above the top of the cage, they would all drown. Trying to stand, she was blocked by the cage's top bars, which forced her into a half squat, her torso bent forward against the bars to stay as high as possible. The chain locket to her neck dangled down. However, it turned out to be an unnecessary worry. Some of the other slaves just knelt up and held the bars at the top of the cage. Others stayed seated. Those who remained seated had the water only up to their buttocks and genitals, not even reaching their chests. A short while after, the bus exited the stream and the water flowed out of the cage. Melissa sat back down, relieved her cage was no longer partially submerged, and thankful the water hadn't climbed higher. But her heart was still racing from the panic, leaving her with lingering anxiety. As they continued their journey, a gentle breeze blew through the cage, cooling her damp skin. The rain had been relentless and turned the world outside the cage into a blur of gray and green, with a background sound of the downpour of rain on the metal of the cage. Now, as the bus trundled along, the clouds parted and the sun emerged, casting long shadows across the landscape. Through the bars, Melissa observed the transformation of the scenery. The wild area glistened with water droplets. Puddles reflected the sky, and the road, already bumpy, was now muddy and causing the bus to rock and sway even more. The air felt thick with moisture, but the warmth of the sun began to assert itself. Shivering from the cold rain, she felt the sun's rays on her naked skin. Water dripped from her hair and ran down her back. But slowly, the heat started to evaporate the moisture. She could feel the warmth spreading across her body as her skin began to dry. The air around her became steamy. The metal of the cage, now cool from the rain, began to heat up again. The bus stopped again. There was no settlement, just what appeared to be a farm. The bus driver came out again with two men. He unlocked the cage, and the ritual that almost felt familiar to Melissa by now played out again. The bus driver unlocked the trailer cage, and she obediently filed out, stood in the mud, and with a sigh, spread her legs, raised her hands to her shoulder, and turned her palms forward. The other slaves did the same. As the woman stepped out, Melissa glimpsed a weathered wooden sign by the roadside, its faded letters spelling out Coconut Grove Farm, against a backdrop of sprawling fields and coconut trees. The bus driver unlocked the two male slaves and the woman who was leaking breast milk, leaving only Melissa, the two slave girls, and the other woman on the chain. The male slaves and the lactating woman were picked up by two men from the bus and headed towards the farm. With a double clap, the bus driver released them from their position, and she went back into the cage with the other slave. The bus driver locked them in, and the bus continued their journey. The landscape changed. The dense vegetation gave way to more open spaces, and soon the salty scent of the sea filled the air. She caught glimpses of the ocean through breaks in the foliage, its surface sparkling under the sun. The road seemed to become more smooth as they came closer to the ocean, and the potholes became less frequent. The village at the beach was a blend of mud huts, wooden huts, and some modern buildings. The beach itself stretched out, sand still wet from the rain, with the tide drawing lines in the sand. Children played near the water's edge, their laughter carried on the breeze. Fishermen were visible, preparing or mending nets, and small boats bobbed gently on the water. From her cage, she observed life continuing around her. The market stalls, now starting to dry out, were being set up with goods, the locals moving with a practiced ease. The sun, high in the sky, dried the last of the rain from the ground, from her skin, leaving behind a sense of heat and the smell of salt and earth. She heard the sounds of this new place, the waves, the calls of seabirds, the chatter of the villagers. The bus slowed, turning onto a path that led directly to the village center. Now mostly dry, but still feeling the residue of dampness, she hoped this was their destination. She watched the life around her through the bars of the cage as the bus came to a stop at the market square. Melissa couldn't see the people exiting the bus, but she saw some of them walking away past her cage. A few people stood near the trailer cage and waited. Her friends soon appeared. Seeing them was a relief, signaling the end of the journey. Tariq had his arm around Amina's shoulders, and Marcus was in conversation with the two older men, speaking German. Apparently, they were compatriots. Arbek was chatting and laughing with Zahara. Then the bus driver came into view. He unlocked the cage, and the routine started once more, this time with her friends watching. Melissa stepped out, assumed the position by spreading her legs, placing her hands at shoulder height, and turning her palms forward. She waited for the other slaves to follow suit. The bus driver unlocked the female slave who had been locked to the chain right before she had been locked to it. She walked over to her owner, and they walked away. She watched as the other two slaves, whom she supposed were sex slaves, were released and returned to the two elderly men. The men said their goodbyes to Marcus and then strolled down the street in the direction of the beach. Melissa was the last slave on the chain and still waiting to be freed. She was still holding the demeaning pose while her friends were waiting for her. Marcus was staring at her again, but she was too exhausted to be angry about it. The bus driver walked up close to her, and she smelled the tobacco in his breath again. He took out a key and unlocked the padlock at her collar. As he took it, the chain fell to the ground. Removing the padlock released her from her position, so she stepped over the chain and went to her friends, her naked skin still slick from the rain.
God, I need something to drink. Anything,
she said, her voice a mixture of relief and desperation. Marcus reached into his backpack and pulled out a bottle of Coke.
Here, Mel, have some of this,
he offered, extending it toward her. Melissa took the bottle, her hands trembling slightly from the ordeal, and drank eagerly. The carbonated liquid was a small comfort, her face showing the relief of quenching her thirst. Arbeck watched her, his concern evident.
Was the trip that bad, Melissa?
He asked, his tone gentle but anxious for the truth. She lowered the bottle, still catching her breath.
Bad doesn't even cover it. That cage was like an oven, and then the rain came down on me like I was in a damn shower. I was still thirsty as hell,
she explained, her voice tinged with the memory of her discomfort. Tariq shook his head, sympathy in his eyes.
Sounds really bad.
Melissa's eyes met Arbeck's, her gaze a blend of relief and reproach.
Why didn't anyone check on me? I could have used some water, you know.
Arbeck's face flushed with guilt.
Shit, Melissa, I'm sorry. I didn't have water with me. I was just talking with everyone, and I didn't think I should have checked on you.
He admitted, his regret palpable. Her tone softened, understanding creeping in, despite the ordeal.
It was rough, really rough,
she murmured, the weight of her experience heavy in her words.
I know, I'm sorry. We'll make sure you're okay from now on, I swear.
Arbeck promised, his voice sincere. Marcus extended the bottle again.
Here, take some more.
Melissa took another long sip. She handed the bottle back, nodding her thanks.
Thanks, Marcus. That helps,
she said, her voice steadier now. As they walked away from the market square towards the rented hut, Melissa felt the sand under her bare feet, the texture both gritty and grounding. The sand clung to the moisture on her skin. Melissa's steps were slow, acutely aware of the local eyes upon her, some filled with curiosity, others showing indifference. As she walked, a group of male slaves passed by on the opposite side of the street, chained in a coffle, their hands bound behind them with zip ties. Seeing other naked slaves eased her discomfort with her own nudity. Surrounded by her friends, she felt a level of safety she hadn't experienced in days. Despite her fatigue and the urge to cover up, she maintained a posture of dignity, moving with a cautious grace. The gentle breeze felt oddly intimate with the wind swirling around her breasts, through her hair, and between her legs and back. She felt her steel collar resting on the base of her neck, and an unexpected feeling of liberation from being unclothed in public. Arbeck's arm around her shoulders was a small shield against the wind, but it couldn't cover the entirety of her exposure.
You must be starving,
he said, looking at her with concern.
Yeah, famished,
Melissa admitted, her stomach echoing her words with a growl.
But also, just glad to be here with you guys.
Tariq, leading the way, chimed in.
We were thinking about hitting up that little seafood place by the pier for dinner. They have the best grilled fish in the area.
Sounds perfect,
Zahara agreed.
And maybe after, we can walk along the beach. It's really beautiful at night.
Melissa nodded. With nothing covering her, she experienced the world in a more visceral way. The sun warming her skin, the breeze chilling her, the sand massaging her feet. Amina looked at Melissa with empathy.
I know it's tough being like this for 10 more days, but we'll make sure you're comfortable.
Melissa was exhausted. Here in the hut, she was finally shielded from having the eyes of the public on her naked body. She looked at Amina, then at Arbeck with Zahara, standing right next to him, and said,
No, I'm coming with you. I want some food now. We won't be away for long, right?
Of course not,
Tariq said.
It has been a long day for you. You must be exhausted. We'll just have some nice food, and then we'll be back to rest. The fish restaurant is very close.
Melissa appreciated their understanding. The conversation about dinner brought a normalcy to the situation, grounding her in the present moment, rather than the ordeal she'd just endured. And although she was naked, her friends talking about mundane things like food and restaurants, she felt as if her life was otherwise normal again, at least if she didn't think about it too hard. As they walked, she was simultaneously relieved and apprehensive, relieved at the prospect of rest, apprehensive about how the next 10 days would unfold. But with her friends, the hunger for food, and the anticipation of a warm evening by the beach, she felt a glimmer of hope that she could navigate this strange chapter of her life with some semblance of dignity and companionship.